Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today we have a very special show for you, all locals. Three people who have made Anchorage home for decades and who can remember what it was like here in the 50s and 60s. They'll tell us about their community, of the flats near what is now Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church on 20th Avenue, and of Green Acres, located where Providence Hospital and UAA are today. These were black neighborhoods in the 50s and 60s in Anchorage. Who came to Anchorage back then? Why did they come? And what was it like here for them? We'll learn all that today when we talk to our guests. But before I go there, I just want to thank three people. I call them creatives, Shirley Staten and Vivian Meld and Angelina Burley Estrada Burney, all worked on a centennial project for Anchorage's 100th birthday that had to do with finding the stories of people who came here to stay and why they stayed and how they made community. So we're going to get a little slice of that today. They took a big slice out of the community. We're taking a little one. But you can hear more stories on April 11th, and you can tell your own story on April 19th. Just check out our website at alaskapublic.org for times and locations. But now let's get to our guests, and we're going to do a quick round robin and introduce each of you to our listening audience. I am going to start really quickly with Chuck Farrell.
Thank you.
He just told me how to say it right. Yeah. Okay, Chuck, when did you arrive in Anchorage?
I arrived in Anchorage, Alaska, 1960, May 15.
And what brought you here? I know you came from Waco, Texas, but what brought you here?
A construction.
Okay.
Yeah, I came here with a construction company, PK&S, Peter Key Whitt and Son.
Yes. And what was a big first impression for you? I know you went first to Fort Greeley to do work, and then you eventually came down to Anchorage. I'm really focusing on Anchorage, and what was a first impression for you of Anchorage back in 1960?
It wasn't a city, it was a town. It was a lot of opportunities here. And in the construction industry, there were a lot of openings to work in any field that you wanted to in the construction industry.
So you saw opportunity.
Yeah, opportunity is what made me stay here.
That's great. That's great. Let's go to Elizabeth. I want to get everybody introduced here. Elizabeth Carew.
Yes.
Hi, Elizabeth. When did you come to Anchorage?
February. I don't quite remember the date in February. But it's February 1968.
Okay. And what brought you here?
Well, I got a job with Western Airline. So.
And they said, we're sending you to Anchorage.
They said, we're working in Anchorage. And I came. My friends told me all about Alaska. And I was surprised.
Because it wasn't like what they said?
It totally wasn't like they said.
Okay. And what is a first impression you had of Anchorage back in 1968?
People were wearing miniskirt at that time. And when I came at the airport, I saw people with miniskirt.
In February.
And they had told me that Alaska was very, very cold. And I was shocked.
You were trying to put miniskirts together with snow. How does that work?
Yes.
That's great. And now I want to introduce Don Macon. Don, I know that you were born in Anchorage, so you don't have to say what your first impression of Anchorage was as a squalling baby. But tell us a little bit. You have a lot of history of Anchorage, and tell us a little bit about why you know that history.
I know that history because my parents, thank goodness, they told me a lot about it. They talked about the stories a lot. And I lived in a community in a neighborhood called Green Acres where it was more like a village. And everyone talked about what was going on in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I've lived here since 81, and I really had not heard of Green Acres or the Flats. And so I just wanted to share that with our audience. And we're going to come back and talk more about that, because Don has some great stories about Green Acres, and Chuck has some good stories about the Flats. But right now I want to bring Shirley Staton in. Shirley was one of the three creatives that kind of pulled this together. And I just want to, you guys have been working on this for about a year and a half
or
so?
Yes, about a year and a half, and three of us are working on the project, Vivian Meldy and Angelina Estrada Barney is mm-hmm. working on it, and it is a part of the centennial celebration on why people of color came here in between 1915 and 2000. And we were really interested in those stories that we've not heard. And as a result, we collected great stories mm-hmm. from African Americans, Elizabeth, who is from Sierra Leone, Africans, Samoans, Latino, Filipino, Korean. Mm-hmm. Will be among the many stories that we've collected. And they're fascinating. They're mm-hmm. fascinating stories.
Yeah. So today we're blessed to have three folks who can talk to us about Anchorage in the 50s and 60s from the African American or African community. So I wanted to jump back in and kind of talk about the Flats. So, Chuck, we're going to go to you. Chuck Farrell.
Good job.
I gather from listening to you earlier before the show that it was a very lively place, that there were actually clubs and restaurants there. So this is right down where Shiloh is, kind of near Chester Creek, right?
Right.
What did it look like when you got there?
Well, it looked very downgraded, it was called. It was more like in the ghetto. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing down there but mud.
Lots of Anchorage natural, was pretty muddy back then.
Just natural streets was put in just by whoever wanted to.
So was it cabins? Did you see individual cabins?
You would get stuck going from club to club in the middle of the winter when it would break up down in the Flats.
Yeah.
It was lots of, most of the nightclubs was down in the Flats.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of run down, but it was the people that owned the clubs down there, everybody went down to be entertained or entertained.
And eat.
And mm-hmm. eat, yeah. Mm-hmm. There was several restaurants down there that good southern cooking, so on and so forth.
Let me throw out our phone numbers. I forgot to do it, Chuck. And I just, if there's listeners out there who remember the Flats or, built down there at one time or moved from there, but remember, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have questions for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. So the number in Anchorage is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And if you're shy, we can take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org, and we'd love to hear from you. So, but back to you, Chuck. Do you remember the names of any of those clubs?
One of the names was the Jeanette Johnson owned it. It was the
It Crazy Horse then? Was it the Crazy Horse?
No. It was
it located where the Crazy Horse?
It was called the Alaska Show Club. Mm-hmm. And she had the dancing girls and the like the burlesque type
mm-hmm.
shows and things was going on there. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the Flats, as I recall, it was very entertaining. It was, everybody's going to the Flats. It was okay.
Everybody went.
Yeah, everybody went to the Flats.
Yeah. You mentioned Jeanette Johnson. You also mentioned a club up at 15th and Hyder. Do you know which one I'm talking about? Jack Ford.
Oh, yeah, that was the Brief Encounter.
The Brief Encounter.
Yeah, that was one of the more finer clubs that was opened up in this town by Jack Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Ford had ran an uptown, beautiful club that the bankers, real estate agents, everybody went to the brief encounter.
Mm-hmm.
It was up on 15th and Hyder Street.
I know you said earlier that really business was done in these clubs. That's where some of the contractors got their work. I mean, there was a lots of wheeling and dealing. I guess bankers and construction people were there.
Yes, back in those days, mostly our work came from the nightclub life. Everybody made deals in the clubs over a cocktail.
Sounds like a handshake.
handshake and says, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The grease of business. And, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it wasn't nothing to sit down in the brief encounter and somebody said, well, there's old Chuck over there. Hey, Chuck, I'm on a hold up. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, what are we going to do? Well, I got a set of plans here. We just go do it.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a job.
And that's the way it went.
Yeah. I wonder, was music big there? Was there music a big part of it? And
yes.
Was it jazz? What was it?
Yeah. The brief encounter had more jazz and common sitting around having cocktails until they opened the downstairs for nightlife and dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And it went for quite a while.
Yeah. I wonder if people really dressed to the nines to go out to these places. Were they pretty fancy, you know, outfits and things like that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very. In those days, they were very fancy in their styles.
Yeah.
They wore it.
Didn't matter that it was Anchorage, Alaska. The miniskirts were there, right?
The miniskirts.
Exactly.
Back in those days, I was a cowboy.
You were a cowboy.
Yeah. I wore my cowboy Stetson hat, my high heel boots.
Wow. Yeah. I can see it, Chuck. I can see it. All that Texas influence, right? how about the food? Was the food classic Southern food, or what were they serving? Was it steaks? What was it?
It was mainly Louisiana food. They cooked in the Deep South.
Mm-hmm.
There was people here that was specialized in cooking all of these different dishes. The big steaks was normal. That was normal. You go downtown Anchorage for that. But they had more of the restaurants had a feed like the Golden Corral is today.
Oh, yeah.
They did a variety of home-cooked food.
Yeah.
And you would go in there and you would kind of like at steam tables, you'd help yourself.
Yeah.
And that's the way that was good food. Back in those days.
We got a caller, and I always love to say thank you, callers, for mm-hmm. calling in. We've got Eddie. Hi, Eddie. You're talking with Hometown Alaska. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. I have a note here that you grew up in 1956 here?
I was born in 1956 here at Old Providence Hospital down on L.
Cool. And does the Flats ring a bell with you?
This is where I grew up.
Ah, well, I'd love to hear your description. Tell me a little bit about what it was like. What was your house like? What was it like there?
Well, where the senior center is, I would say completely to the end, which would be the east end of 17th, was our home. Across the street from us, there was one house, and then there was another home that we owned on the next corner. And that was pretty much it down there.
So somewhat of wide open spaces. You had elbow room down in the front.
Extreme elbow room. I mean, the homes were like a block apart, you know.
And
if you went to the west side of Carlock on 17th, there was all of the equipment from the war, I guess. There were tanks and trucks and airplanes, you know, military. And across the street, I'll never forget, there was place called the Red Hut,
yeah.
And then our family had a liquor store.
Chuck is saying yeah.
Yes.
He remembers. What was
we
that?
We had the little liquor store.
Uh-huh.
And then my aunt, my mom, Miss Pennywell.
Yeah. And oh, Miss Pennywell.
Oh,
my goodness.
That rang a big bell here.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. We remember Miss Pennywell.
Yes. So talk about Miss Pennywell.
Bum was, they called her Bum, and that was on her license plate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What did she do? What was her role?
Her role was just the queen, you know.
Yes.
Yes,
queen. There has to be one, and she was it. All right.
It was just so much fun, you know. Myself and a girlfriend of mine, Pansy Blackwell, and
yes,
Linda,
my twin,
Franklin, mm-hmm. were the only girls our age, and there was like 17 boys. And my goodness, coming home from school, you had to run all the way to the house.
I bet that toughened you up a little bit, though, huh? You could fend for yourself.
The one thing I wanted to touch on was how open, and there was no color. You know, at least in my world, there was no black, there was no white. Everyone needed each other at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, Eddie.
We didn't lock our doors, you know.
Uh-huh.
I'm African American, as they say, and I could get up in the morning and there would be a white gentleman or a white lady in our kitchen cooking, you know.
And, as long as it was something you wanted to eat, it was okay.
Yes. You know, I mean, you hungry? Yes, I am. And they fix breakfast for us too.
Yeah.
And they would take their change, you know, and put it in a napkin and put it under, you know, on the table.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. So you really remember this very fondly, Eddie.
Very much. It's the highlight of my life, seriously, growing up.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I'm going to welcome another caller, Eddie. Thank you so much. I really, and I have to say, Chuck, you brought that caller right out of the woodwork. So thank you. You're a good storyteller. I knew they were out there, and I think you got them. I'd like to welcome Franklin onto the show. Hi, Franklin. This is Hometown Alaska.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I've always been interested in the story, the truth of a story that my grandfather told me. Alaska's always been a place that has reacted a little bit differently than maybe a lot of other states to, you know, events going on nationally. Back in the 60s or 70s, there was, you know, during the period of the civil rights events going on, there was a plane load of activists who were involved in the sit-ins, you know, in other states that came up to Anchorage. And they weren't allowed off the plane. So the question's really not about them. My grandfather was one of the ones that was sent to the border of Palmer by the city of Palmer with guns to keep out the group that was coming off the planes. Well, the black community, the African-American community there, had, well, a fairly good thing going. And I've heard two different stories. Really, I'm curious, what was the reaction and the talk behind what happened there at the plane? I was told that some of the authorities went to the plane. I was told that some of the black merchants went to the plane with guns and kept everybody from getting off.
I'm looking around at our guests in the studio to see if any of them have any insight on this incident, because I honestly do not. Chuck, no, doesn't remember, and you didn't hear your folks talk about it, Dawn, and Elizabeth, you, yeah. No. No. So
and
I
they weren't a part of our stories.
Yeah,
I don't remember.
I don't think we can help you, Franklin. I wish we could, but I don't think we can help you. That is not resonating with our folks here in the studio.
Okay.
So, but thank you. Thank you. And I hope you continue listening and learn some more about what the early days were like here for these folks. So thanks a lot, Franklin.
Okay. Yes, I am listening. Thank you.
All right. Take care. So, gosh, we have another caller coming in, too. Boy, you guys are good. I'm going to jump over to Green Acres a little bit. That was another community that was really thriving, and it's got such a great story about how it came to be. So I'm going to invite Dawn to share a little bit about that with us.
Oh, thank you, Kathleen. Wow, this is really exciting to be here and to be revived in this, you know, this feeling, because it was such a wonderful feeling growing up in Anchorage. And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate the opportunity that my parents saw here and then worked
took the
so hard
leap,
for.
Right?
Yeah, they did. They,
where did
you know,
they come
drove
from,
up. They drove up from Oakland, California, where my father was in the military. And he willingly came to Alaska because he heard there was economic opportunities. And he talks about being in the barracks. You know, he came in the month of December in 1951, and
wow.
They built their, they were in tents, apparently, at that time. And then my mother followed in the car with, you know, in a station wagon.
Your mother drove up?
Yeah, drove up.
In 1951.
With three kids in the car in 1952.
See, it was a different breed
she
of person.
She came in 52. Yes, it was.
They were pioneers. They really were.
They sure were.
Yeah.
And the Alcan was not paved, as I recall, in 1952,
no,
was
I
it?
No, I don't think so. I do not think so.
Yeah. So, and first of all, before I go any further, I want to just do a shout out to my Green Acres folks. Hey, everybody, all over the country. And to my colleagues of families who have been in this state or in this city for much longer, I just want to give a shout out to you and tell you I am just really grateful to be sharing my little piece, our little piece of living in Anchorage.
Yeah. Your folks first were downtown, is that right?
Yes, they were downtown in a little one-room place.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother talks about, and one of the things our family always did, my parents were very pro on this, is people always came and stayed with us. You know, when someone would come to town, they would always stay.
They had a place to land.
Our home even became Dewdrop Inn. That was the nickname for our home. At one time we had, this was when we moved to Green, we were in Green Acres, but we had a family with 13 kids. That and as we're talking about being, you know, living in neighborhoods that were predominantly Black, this was a white family. So, you know, what one of the callers, Eddie, was talking about, you know, there was an incredible mix.
Yes.
But it was significant. They started, in a one-room house. And my mother talked about how there was, you know, some of the underlying prejudices that were there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as obvious in Alaska, but I'm sure Mr. Farrell can speak to this as well. You know, I wasn't as aware because I was born in 1957. Hi, Eddie. I was born in 1957. And so I wasn't as aware. And it wasn't, you know, my parents would talk about it, but it wasn't, you know, we just all got along, so to speak.
Right.
And
didn't dwell on it.
But my mother talks about how the landlord would come in and literally inspect her pots and pans.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is when they lived downtown in this one-room place. And that was common, and that was well known that was something that would happen. Yeah.
Like you say, it's there, it's you're here, but we're going to check on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I'm going to welcome a caller. We're going to come back to Green Acres, but I'm going to welcome a caller. Christopher, you're on Hometown Alaska. Welcome.
Hello there. Thank you. Yeah, Chris Consoon, president of the Council.
Hi, Christopher.
Hello. Thanks for doing the show. It's really great to have this subject.
I think you're going to make our guests just feel so terrific. Thank you, Christopher. But go ahead. Go ahead.
I want to take this just back a little bit towards that question of the civil rights. I had heard from our esteemed historian, Cal Williams, that there was once a red line district in Anchorage, basically written around Fairview. And it'd be great if anyone knows about that a little bit, can talk about it. And Cal has told me that the founding of the Green Acres was a response to breaking through that red line. So that's a little history question.
We are getting some shaking heads here. Yes, Don, you want to pick up there?
Yes. So the stories that my elders passed on was that the way Green Acres came about was a lady named Miss Green. It was well known in the Black community across Anchorage that real estate folks did not want to, you know, would be withholding in terms of loans for buying property. And in fact, my father, before I moved to Miss Green, my father actually, when he was in the military, and he had his colleagues had gone to this one particular real estate person to get a loan to purchase land. And so he's like, well, these, you know, I'm a soldier too, you know. So he went to the same guy, and the guy told him under no circumstances would he do business with a, you know, and he used the N-word, right? Mm, and right. So Dad went back to base. Well, the word got to the base commander, and the base commander took my father back down to this guy and said, this is my soldier, and you will give him whatever it is that he needs. And if you don't, I will call this entire city off limits to all military personnel.
Wow.
So that was how my dad was able to purchase lots in Green Acres.
Wow.
And so in regards to the story about Green Acres, the story is that there was a Miss Green who homesteaded that land. And because it was well known that they would have problems, blacks would have problems getting property, she made it a point to sell the lots to black families. Mm-hmm. And my family was one of them. And that is how Anchorage, Green Acres in Anchorage, became a black neighborhood.
Wow. So I really don't think that's as well known. Some people, mm-hmm. certainly it's very well known with them and still living there. It's probably still thriving. But I think newcomers are thinking Fairview, Mountain View, those are the mm-hmm. diverse communities. Mm-hmm. And then here, these really predate that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but it just, you know, seems like Green Acres was there way before.
It wasn't. The other neighborhood were there first, mm-hmm. As I understand it, in terms of volume, you know, okay. numbers. But it was definitely significant that Green Acres came about that way.
Wow, mm-hmm. that's great. Chris, did we...
And I didn't realize it until a few years ago. Actually, it didn't hit me in that way that I, quote unquote, grew up in a black neighborhood in Alaska. You know, it just, it's like, yeah. Oh, really? You know?
Yeah, that's great. Chris, do you have any more questions, or would we do a good job on that redlining?
No, the only thing is I would suggest somebody write a book about the amazing history of the black women who built Alaska.
Hmm. What a good idea.
There are some colorful ladies from that time period, Zulu Swanson, which there are wonderful stories about her.
Tell us just a tiny bit.
Smith. You know, Blanche McSmith is one mm-hmm. that Mahalia Ashley Dickerson,
there
are great stories about her. Yes, that's a good idea of... women from that era. One person that was going to be here today, Martha Fair, came
Shout
in
out
1949. She's ill. She couldn't come.
Yes.
And she came up and worked in construction in 1949. She was scouting for her husband and because he worked in construction, but also she knew construction. And she actually built her house.
Oh, more than one house,
yes,
I think.
Yes, more than one
she
house.
She also said she dozed on the, she drove a dozer in mm-hmm. winter mm-hmm. on the pipeline.
Yes.
Now,
yes,
Chuck, you can appreciate that. So we're sorry Martha can't be with us today, but boy, we did hear her stories, and they will be a part of, people mm-hmm. can hear her stories. So I can see a twinkle in Shirley's eye. I have a feeling a book might be in the launch.
Yeah. One more thing.
So I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time. We're going to take a little break here at 2:30, but we'd love these people who contributed have been fantastic, and our guests are fantastic, so we're going to come back and talk some more about Anchorage. But, you know, give us a call after our break at 550-8433 statewide, 1-888-353-5752, or send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about opportunity here. I want to know what it was like to grow up in Green Acres, actually.
And start business, because Elizabeth started a business.
Yes, and then we're going to go to, definitely, Elizabeth. We have not gotten a peep out of you, and we're going to get a peep out of you. So I'm Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And if you have joined us midstream, I just want to tell you who our guests are today. We are talking about Anchorage in the 50s and 60s and what the experience of the Black community was here. It was thriving. It was vibrant. It included music, restaurants, clubs, and also many interesting people that really influenced how Anchorage developed. And so in the studio today, we have Chuck Farrell. Chuck, we're going to hear more from you in the second half hour, Chuck, but here since 1960. We have Dawn Macon here in the studio. She was born here, so many of the stories she's sharing with us are from her childhood of growing up here and also the things her parents talked to her about. And then we also have Elizabeth Carew, and we're going to come back to you right now, Elizabeth, and sort of talk a little bit more with you about how you came. And one more person, we have Shirley Staten sitting here too, popping in every now and then with some good tidbits. So, Elizabeth, let's go back to you. You gave us that great story about the mini skirts at the airport in February. And you were working for Western Airlines.
Yes.
Did you come up, were you single when you came up, or did you bring a family, or what was your situation?
Well, I was single when I came up, and I do have children, you know.
Are they here too?
No. Mm-hmm. They finished high school and they went to college and they kept going.
Yeah, so now you have many places to visit around.
Yes.
People to visit.
Yeah. And they visit sometimes, or when they get into trouble, then they come home.
Got to check in with mom.
Yes.
Yeah. Why did you stay, Elizabeth? And where did you live when you first got here?
Oh, when I first came here, I was living on 15th and E.
Okay.
Right across from Central Junior High.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living there, and it was nice, even though my impression when I get here was I came in February, and the first summer that I experienced was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We know about those good summers.
Yeah, and I could not believe 8 o'clock at night, it's broad daylight. 1 o'clock in the morning, people are playing football because it's so bright.
Elizabeth, talk about the contrast of being coming from Sierra Leone and living in Anchorage. Talk about that contrast.
Well, in Sierra Leone, 8 o'clock at night, it's pitch dark. So when I came here and I find out how bright it was and how nice it was, and I felt that people were telling stories about Alaska because they don't want people to come here.
You found a good thing, and you don't want anybody to mess it up.
Yeah. Until I experienced my first winter. Mm-hmm. When I got the first winter, then I realized.
Yeah.
You know.
I want to, what was the darkness like for you? I mean, there's cold is one thing, but these recent, like this past winter, we didn't really have that much snow, so it was dark. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's that gets a grip on you. And I know, Chuck, I saw in your bio that you went to Hawaii. But how about you, Elizabeth? How did you handle the darkness? Was it easy for you?
It was easy for me because you close your eyes when you go to sleep.
Ultimately practical. Of course, you're right.
So it was easy for me. And even when it's broad daylight, you know, you put some shade on and then you can go to sleep.
Yeah, so you just roll with it. Yeah.
I just roll with it.
Now, Shirley said you had a business, and I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. What was that?
Yeah, I opened a African store in 1997, and it was nice.
Where was it?
It was opposite the hotel.
The Hilton Hotel.
Yes, okay. It was opposite the Hilton Hilton Hotel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, were there many Africans when you came here?
No.
How did you find other Africans?
Well, when I came here, there are very few Africans. Mm-hmm. There was one lady that was wearing African clothing, mm-hmm. and she was going around. I was the African here.
Mm-hmm. The African. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was the African here, and I also have a fashion show, African fashion show, mm-hmm. at the nightclubs.
I remember the
brief encounters.
Oh, at brief encounters. Wow. Yes. Okay, so yes. Fashion show. Uh-huh. Wow. Yes. Wow. That's great. And you were importing things, I'm sure, from Africa.
Yes, I was importing things from Africa. But when I first came here, everybody knows everybody, mm-hmm. because it was so small community, mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. you know, whenever you're driving, they will look at you because they know that they're supposed to know you.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yes. So they don't, yeah. If they can't remember yes. who you are, they don't want you to know that. They want yes. you to think, oh, yeah, I know you. Yeah.
No, but everybody supposed Did to know everybody know. Because it was small community.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, yeah. Well, I said we're going to go back to Green Acres, and this reminds me of that. Mm. Dawn, I heard a story from you about people would come together if somebody needed a roof, you know, come together on the weekend. And yes. you know, it was very much how you can help, how you can contribute. And that was true of Green Acres, right?
Yeah, that was standard operating procedure.
Not just in Green Acres, probably.
Right, yeah.
All over Anchorage.
Yeah, yes. But because Green Acres was all woods, like we live three blocks off of Lake Otis, mm-hmm. on 38th. And because it was all woods, when they first started, you know, everybody built their homes there. You know, everything was from the ground up. And it was just very common for other people to pitch in when somebody else was working on their home. Mm-hmm. It was just standard. Mm-hmm. And it was, and that actually helped to create or actually helped to feel the feeling of the place, that whole neighborhood. It really did feel like I was growing up in a village. I was talking to my aunt who's been there since she was 18 years old.
Wow.
She came to babysit me. I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Aunt Jenny.
She was there, but we were talking about that and how families just pitched in together. It was such a safe environment. And it was... the parents never worried about where their kids were, because if we were anywhere in Anchorage, they knew we were safe. Mm-hmm. They knew mm-hmm. we were, you know, it just didn't matter where we were. The family stuck together, mm-hmm. you know, when something would come up, the families would stick together. Like mm-hmm. a situation came up. I don't know if this is the time for that.
Go
in
ahead.
Regards
Jump
to.
In.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So when... and the way, and this is, remember, this is translated, how it's translated to me. So someone out there may have even a different version or more accurate way of saying it. But the way it was explained to me, the city basically waved their checks in front of the folks in the flats, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. in Mountain View, mm-hmm. and so Fairview and Mountain View, and bought these homeowners' properties. So these mm-hmm. black families that lived there that had these homes, you know, they had their own homes, and it was very community. Everyone knew everyone, as mm-hmm. as Elizabeth was said. We would always sneak out from Green Acres and go to the flats and hang out, by the way.
That was a cool place to be.
You know, yeah. I mean, I remember being 16, and I could go into the clubs because everybody knew me, and they would tell my parents if I did anything, right?
Yeah,
or
yeah.
if I drank any liquor, they would tell on me. So.
Takes a village.
Yeah. So, and what happened is, so the families obviously accepted the checks and moved out of the neighborhoods, and then these big developers came in, mm-hmm. and then they built all the apartment buildings, and then mm-hmm. that's when you started having a lot of absent landlords and mm-hmm. and property owners, and mm-hmm. And so they were getting ready to come after
to Green Acres,
and my mother talks about this young, and she specifically said, because it was significant, young white, a 20-year-old attorney, female attorney, mm-hmm. that gave them the heads up that they were getting ready to come after Green Acres and try to buy out the property. Mm-hmm. And so they got together, our parents got together, and they they resisted. They said, "No, you can't buy us out.
We're not moving.
We're not moving. We're keeping nice little, you know, comfortable, safe, community-oriented block parties. You know, kids walking around in pajamas at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, we are keeping this neighborhood." And as a result, it remained. And we really believe. And so, what the city did is then they raised the taxes. Right? They just really jacked the taxes up on their property. But what we really believe is that contributed to some of the challenges that Mountain View and Fairview started having in regards to versus Green Acres, right? Because here we have a black neighborhood, and you know that stereotype that if you have a lot of blacks, there's going to be a lot of problems. Well, you know, it never happened. And it still today is it's a very diverse neighborhood now.
Yes, yes.
I actually have to turn my head now, you know. You know, I've been into places like Medford, Oregon, where the police would even turn and look at me because they knew how many black people lived in Medford. But now when I go to Green Acres, I turn and look. I go, "Oh, that's not a black person." You know, it's like because it just, you know.
That's very funny. Could you give us, just for people who don't have the history, where is it? I mean, you said it was where UAA and the Providence are now. Is it right behind there? If you were to give the streets now, can you possibly give the streets?
It's between Lake Otis and McGinnis, or let's just say Lake Otis and
Tudor.
So going west.
Lake Otis and
between
Tudor
36th and Tudor.
Yeah. Okay. That was Green Acres. It is Green Acres. Yeah. It's still Is there a sign anywhere that says Green Acres over there?
You know there's not.
There should
think
be.
It's, yeah.
There should be. Yeah. just because it's such great history. Yeah.
CME Church is over there, too.
Which went?
CME.
First CME.
CME.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well,
yeah, that
big brown church next to across the street from David Green Park.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I do know that. They had a big fire a couple years ago, right?
Yes.
Go ahead, Chuck. Yeah, jump in.
It also butts up against Geneva Woods.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's right in that area there. But
all right.
I did all of the extension on the waters and sewers into off from 36th Street into Green Acres.
Oh, wow.
As I recall now, it was a very few black folks that controlled Green Acres. That was the Lockharts.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember
That's right. I remember the Lockharts. Betty Lockhart.
Betty, Johnny.
They all went to Shiloh.
Yeah.
And then the Makins.
Yep.
The Makins and the Lockharts.
Didn't Reverend Patterson live down there?
Yes.
No. Yes.
He was there in
at one time he lived down there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then we had, like I said, the.
Did the Pennywells live down there?
No,
they didn't.
Yeah.
Prominent families.
Yeah, you know? It makes me wonder. Why? I mean, it feels like they should have been on the city council. They should have been, you know, sort of in control of some of these city. You know, I mean, was there not representation on the government bodies? And so these kinds of, I guess you could call them urban. Maybe they were urban renewal projects or something like the housing that were able to happen. And the only thing that they could do was resist, but they couldn't influence it before it started, which is unfortunate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to welcome another caller on the line. Ryan, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
He's off.
Oh, we missed Ryan. Okay, well, call back, Ryan. If you call back, we'd love to hear from you. So, let's see. I'm thinking about you guys as the builders of Anchorage, especially when you were saying that, Chuck, about, and I'd like to touch back with you just a little bit. I know when you came in, these are buildings people will know, you worked on Providence, right?
Yeah, that's when they built the new Providence out on, just out here by the university here.
The 36th, right. And so what did you do for them? Did you do excavation for them?
Yeah, I was for the general contractor.
Yeah.
I did all the excavation work for the footings of the building, bringing the water and the sewers in, and backfilling and grading and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and then downtown you also had some big projects downtown.
The Captain Cook Hotel, up at the understanding of it, along with Hickel Investment Company was very huge today, but the shoulder by
with
Governor Wally Hickel.
So give us a little insight
with a gold shovel.
Mr. Hickel, Wally Hickel. Yeah. Did you get to talk to him very much? What was he like?
I knew him personally. We rubbed shoulders and hung
was
out
he a
together.
Down to earth guy?
Yeah, down to earth guy, 100%.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, all of his sons and grandsons and great grandsons and
the Hickel clan.
I'm still doing work for him today.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Hickel Investment Company.
I thought you were going to take a break, Chuck.
Wow.
I can't help myself.
You can. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Can I say something?
Yes, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I came in 1968, there was stories about how much money that Hickel brought with him, maybe $58 in his pocket.
Small amount of money.
Yes.
Yeah, that sort of self-made man.
Yeah. Right.
Is it true, Chuck?
I'm not going to comment on that.
You're not claiming a historian, right? So let me think. I know something else I think people might find interesting. The sidewalks. Anchorage did not have sidewalks. I just saw the Centennial movie the other day, and they talked about when they put sidewalks in on 4th Avenue, that was the only sidewalks. But you came along, Chuck, and you changed that, right? So
yeah,
where were your sidewalks?
My sidewalks is all down 4th Avenue, 3rd Avenue, and 5th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
50% of the walks back in 65, right after the quake, 50% of the walks through 4th and 3rd Avenue were boardwalks.
Mm-hmm.
They were some kind of asphalt, cement, this and that. Somebody threw a little concrete out here. So you didn't have a continuously sidewalk all the way through. You had to be a little piece of concrete here. Somebody just throwed it out there, you know.
Yeah.
No code, no nothing.
Yeah.
Boardwalk right here. You better be careful how you walk. You stumble. And they had a lot of these little, now they call them attic entryways.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But they was called mud rooms then.
Mud rooms.
So you come off the sidewalk, and you go to go in the door, and they had a little mud room that you stomp your feet off.
Yeah.
And then you walk in the store.
Oh, yeah. Era gone by. Yeah.
Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah. You know, this fellow Ryan that was on the phone, he actually, I'm not sure we're going to be able to answer his question because he's broadening the history that he's interested in. Airport Heights.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any history there? I believe it was military housing, right? You lived in Unaka Valley, right, Chuck?
I thought I lived in Unaka Valley for
Airport Heights.
3 years. No.
Yeah.
And it's way on out the highway.
Right.
Airport Heights is right over there by Humana Hospital.
Humana, Alaska Regional.
Right.
But we don't, do you have any, just from your construction background, do you have any of the history there of the early times?
I put in a lot of waters and sewers over there. That's where.
You can thank Chuck for your flush toilet.
Yeah.
That's where Senator C.R. Lewis lived in Airport Heights.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I think he had like 12, 14 kids.
Mm. Oh, my. Mm-hmm.
And I used to be putting in waters and sewers and at different people's houses over there.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of update, new foundations, and so on and so forth in the airport.
Yeah.
In fact, all of my work was, I live downtown Anchorage and in Fairview, Mountain View, the Flats. All of that started my excavation off, but I ended up after being here 10 years, then I moved to Rabbit Creek.
Mm-hmm. I did want to roll. So thank you for bringing up Rabbit Creek. I was here when I got here in 81, and I had at least one meal out there. So tell us about Rabbit Creek, because I think a lot of people will remember it, but a lot of people, it might be the first time they hear about it.
Well, the thing about Rabbit Creek, when I moved out to Rabbit Creek in 1970, there wasn't any black out there at all.
Mm. There probably wasn't many of anything out there.
But there was nothing but a couple of nice restaurants out there. And I ended up being affiliated with one of them, the Rabbit Creek Inn,
mm-hmm.
and for many years. And but everybody said, why in the world did the contractors and so on and so forth, why did Chuck move all the way out there to Rabbit Creek?
All the way out there to...
But it was exactly 10 miles out from 15th and Gamble. It was exactly 10 miles out to where I'd set my construction yard up at.
Room. You moved out there for the room, probably. Yeah. I'm going to throw out our phone numbers for folks just one more time because, you know, we might squeeze in a few more phone calls. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And hometown at alaskapublic.org, we can take an email from you.
So, you know, when Chuck and Elizabeth and Don walked in, it was like a reunion.
It was.
It was like a reunion. So I don't know, Chuck, how do you know Elizabeth? Elizabeth, how do you know Chuck? How do your stories, because we just heard, you know, everybody knew everybody. So how did you
Can
know
you remember
each other?
When you first met Elizabeth?
Yes, I remember when I first met Miss
Elizabeth
Cruz.
Okay.
Cruz.
I was a young fella back in them days.
Oh, yes.
But she gave a fashion show at the Brief Encounter.
Oh.
And
this was at 15th and Hyder, roughly, the Brief Encounter? Okay.
She was very stunning, let me tell you.
She's still stunning, and, I have to say.
Of course, you know, I got to get to know folks.
You got to keep tabs on everybody, right?
And then we know she was very easy to talk with. I didn't quite understand her. I still have a hard time doing that today.
Defend and yourself, Elizabeth.
This is the first time I've seen her in about 15 years.
Oh, my God.
I mean, to have any conversation.
Just sit down and talk.
I've seen her about 3 or 4 years ago at a funeral.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's see.
And I said, where have you been? You know, I don't see it. This is the first time I've seen
Don.
I don't know how long it's been since I've seen. I can't remember.
Do you remember Don as a little girl?
Yeah. No. Because, see, I'm in the Rabbit Creek area.
That's true.
And I come in town. I was like a stranger in here, but I did all my work down here. Mm-hmm. We're back in the point.
Yeah. So you had more than one job at one time. So you had construction, but you also were maitre d' at the...
Oh, I used to run as many as 4 jobs at one time in this city.
Entrepreneur.
I had 8 operators. I had quite a little
operation.
Chain of operation here. And
yeah.
And it wasn't anybody in the early 70s. It was hard to get anybody to do work, but everybody was building, like in Green Acres.
So busy.
Green Acres took off. Mm-hmm. Everybody mm-hmm. was building houses.
So they didn't want to work for you because they were building houses in Green Acres.
Call Chuck Farrell. I don't know how many foundations I didn't do for Lockhart.
Mm-hmm.
I might have done... a couple of the new houses for the Makins. Mm-hmm. Now, your dad, was it Billy?
My dad was John. John Makin.
Now, Billy Makin, who was that one?
Billy was my cousin. He's my cousin, yeah. He's had a construction business for decades.
Yes, oh, wow. Okay. Okay, all right.
Okay.
Well, we all just hang out, I mean, in the construction area that they wanted some excavation done and some waters and sewers put in. I was the man.
You were the man, yeah.
And so I grew to... grew quite large in this business.
Yeah,
and
I'm trying to picture you as a maitre d', actually. Did you wear a black suit?
He was handsome. When he was younger.
We have just a couple minutes left. We have, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes left, but I'm going to welcome Alice on to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Alice.
Oh, hi. I was born and raised in Anchorage in 1950, and so... one of the old-time characters that I know from was a friend of the family was Wendy Jones, and she's was an artistic lady that if you drive down Northern Lights going towards the airport, there'll be Wendy Way, and that was that street that was where her home was on a pond back there. But she was a very flashy, artistic lady that I think everyone that knew from way back when.
Yes. I actually lived in a house that she owned once, and it was way up at Flat Top.
Oh,
and
wow.
a bunch of guys first lived there, and Wendy would announce that she was coming up for the weekend, just make space for me. So she was quite a character. I'm going to welcome Sue onto Hometown Alaska, just because I'm trying to squeeze you all in. We just have a couple minutes left. Hi, Sue.
Hi,
welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. I grew up in Juneau, but when I came to Anchorage in 1980, I was acquainted with Miss Wiggles.
And oh, yes.
Africa,
yeah.
And
yes.
She was
so
a wonderful
awesome.
Lady.
Yes,
and
was.
I just like to bring up her name, and maybe you can
right, right.
Let's talk
a
little a bit
few
about
comments.
Her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
She was an acrobatic, very
yes.
physically fit,
yes.
and would do some performances. And
yes.
She was here when I got here in the early 80s, and I met her once or twice. But
yes.
tell me some stories.
Well, I was so much younger, but I know that her and my mother were like really good friends. I
oh.
remember that. And my mother was like a police. She worked for the police department. In fact, I want to mention that she
yes.
was the first African American to work for the Anchorage Police Department.
I wanted
to the
get
point
that.
Where yeah, where she when she went to apply, she felt like she had to ask them, "Do you hire Negroes?"
Uh-huh.
And
and
apparently
like
they did right. Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah.
just in case, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
she was
so they did.
A meter
and she
maid?
Was a meter maid.
One
yes.
of the first earliest meter maids. We don't even have them anymore. I don't think.
Right.
And
yeah.
and was she a jail matron?
And she was a jail matron too. Yeah. She
yeah.
talks about how they would sneak out of the cells at nighttime, and they'd come back in, and they'd get drunk, and the reason they knew they snuck out is because by in the morning they were drunk. But they'd come back into the jail, though. Right?
They'd yeah. come home.
Yeah.
They wanted breakfast.
Yes.
They wanted breakfast, yeah. So, yeah, these are some great old stories about
yeah.
Anchorage.
Miss Wiggles was wonderful, just, wonderful yeah. human being. She danced at the clubs, right? Was that her originally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she
yes.
was a dancer.
Wonderful
and,
human being.
Gosh, we have only 1 minute left, and I guess I want to remind folks they can hear more of these kind of stories on April 11th at
Wendy
Williams.
Williamson.
And there's an opportunity for people in Anchorage to come together and share their stories, much like you have here today, mm-hmm. and that's April 19th at the Lusac Library. Mm-hmm. And we have some information about that on the alaskapublic.org website. I understand there's a Facebook page that mm-hmm. people can find. Mm-hmm. So I think as we sort of wind down, I'm going to sort of ask you each to give me a sentence on why you stayed. Who wants to jump in first? Just one sentence. Elizabeth is ready.
Opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Opportunity. You stayed for opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How about you, Chuck?
I stayed for the opportunity and progress that was here to make.
Mm-hmm. Progress you could make.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
was open. If you could do something, nobody would hold you back.
Yeah, was something I heard with
yeah.
Martha, too.
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah.
if you have a skill, go for it.
And that was my parents, too. They definitely stayed because of economic opportunity, and I stayed because of the heart that they worked with that helped to instill them in my Green Acres neighborhood instilled in me.
Oh, gosh. You guys, it has been so fun to have you. I want to just thank you so much for coming in and sharing stories. And actually, I think the four of you together make something completely different because you have so many relationships and friendships and old memories. It was lovely. So thank you, Elizabeth Carew, Don Macon, and Chuck Farrell. Shirley Staten also was here with us. And I want to say thanks also to Vivian Meld and Angelina Estrada Burney, who worked on this project as well. Keep those dates in mind, April 11th, April 19th. Next week, Charles Walforth will be back with a program on, this is serious, Divorce Without a Lawyer.
Oh.
Oh. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Evan Erickson is our web editor and audio engineer. Thank you so much for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.